celebrating 50 years of NHL hockey. This is Canucks Connected.
Daniels in the slot. Olin moves up, shoots, and he did that.
Weekly look back that focuses on all the chills.
Round a long pass to Pavel Bure. In the clear, right in. Yeah, it scores! Pavel Bure has won it in overtime.
And thrills.
Campoli has it. Flips it. Burrow steals. Cutting in. Shoots. Scores! They've slain the Dragon!
Of a half century of Canucks hockey, here's your host, Joey Kenward.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Canucks Connected. It's our weekly profile of the Vancouver Canucks alumni as they continue to celebrate 50 years of NHL hockey in Vancouver. Boy, we have two very special guests set to join us on today's program. A pair of alumni who were part of the inaugural Canucks team that hit the ice in 1970, and both have gone down in franchise history as being the firsts in two very important categories. We'll hear from them in a moment. Before that, I want to let you know more about a very special announcement that was made by the alumni earlier this month. As moving forward, the alumni will have a new arena to call home. The Alumni Association has partnered up with the City of Surrey, Sports Surrey, and the Surrey Knights Junior Team to be able to have hosted events at the new North Surrey Sport and Ice Complex. Former defenseman Dave Babich sits on the executive board for the Alumni Association and explains how this new partnership came about.
It kind of just fell in our lap. What had happened? I mean, everyone knows what's been going on in the last while here in the world. And, we were lucky enough to skate at eight rinks for, 30-odd years at the same time. And things started changing, for whatever reason. And then, with COVID, we kind of lost the opportunity to, kind of have our own dressing room. And not just with the restrictions, and everyone's in the same boat. But then one of our alumni members, John Craighead, who owns and runs Surrey Knights, they play out of the North Surrey, the new arena there. They have three seats, and Johnny's offered this for the last few years. It just hasn't worked out until this year, and more by accident, but. He was gracious enough to offer his dressing room that the Knights have, and which has separate entrance, huge dressing room. So the spacing is kind of goes with the COVID rules, and he was able to create a bubble for first of all for his team, and then with the invitation us to do the same thing where we basically go in there, we follow the rules, and. Facility is outstanding out there. I don't know if you've been out there, but brand new rink. I was out there last year with Haley Wickenheiser had Wickfest there, a gals hockey tournament and festival, and the first time I saw it. And Johnny's been so proud of what working with Sports Surrey and the City of Surrey with how he built his dressing room and then. Going there, it was kind of a no-brainer. We just stepped in. Like I said, the dressing room is outstanding. We have lots of room. We had a few skates already, but like I said, it was terrific just to get back on the ice and hang out with the guys. Of course, our numbers are set at 20 or something like that, and even the old guys that. Used to ref, some of them can't come out just because of the numbers, but anyway, it's just great to be out there and see the guys again, because it seems like it's been years since we skated, and we have this great opportunity in Surrey.
Well, and Dave, let's not kid ourselves, whenever this pandemic gets behind us and things return to somewhat normal, that this will be a great opportunity for fans of all ages, because the way that building and those ice sheets are configured, I understand, is when you guys are having games on a regular basis in the future, that fans will be able to come out and see their Canuck heroes from all five decades of the franchise.
Well, for most decades, yeah, for sure. And, maybe the pace may be just a hair slower, but, maybe people won't mind that. But you know what? They'll see how much fun we still have there. And like I said, we whenever we skate, it's kind of, old hockey players, when you get a chance to play again and even scrimmaging and hang out with your buddies, it's kind of a sanctuary for you, and it's a real comfortable spot, even though it's once a week, but we really look forward to it.
Great stuff. That's great news for you and your fellow alumni members, Dave. Thanks for keeping our listeners up to date on what's happening, and look forward to seeing you guys in the rink real soon. Thanks for doing this.
Well, pleasure, Joey, and make sure you, once we get going again, you should come out and check it out. The North Surrey Arena is it's a beautiful spot, and hopefully we get back to normal sooner than later, for sure.
That's Dave Babich telling us more about the alumni's new partnership with the North Surrey Sport and Ice Complex. You can get more info about that announcement by checking out the alumni's website, VancouverCanucksAlumni.org. You can also follow the alumni on their social media feeds, which they keep up to date on nearly a daily basis. They're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all using the same handle, @CanucksAlumni. And by the way, when you're there visiting those sites, you can do your part to support the alumni's initiative for the annual Movember fundraising campaign. All month long, the alumni are doing their part to support men's health, which, of course, is near and dear to so many. If you'd like to make a donation, just follow the links on the Canucks alumni social media outlets. Stay with us. Coming up later on, we're going to go through some of the more important trades made by the organization. Plus, we'll put the spotlight on many of the famous or maybe infamous moments on the Canucks calendar when we take a look back at this week in Canucks history. Right now, it's time to hear from our first guest, who grew up in northern Saskatchewan before embarking on a 20-year hockey career, which included plenty of firsts as a member of the Canucks.
The next alumni profile is on former Canucks captain Orlin Kurtenbach.
Number 25, center and the team captain, Orlin Kurtenbach.
Orlin Kurtenbach grew up in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, and had a chance to play in two Memorial Cup tournaments in the 1950s. He'd turned pro in 1957, playing for the Canucks when they were in the Western League, and he won a championship in 1958. He'd play for original six NHL franchises like New York, Boston, and Toronto before returning to the West Coast to play for the Canucks in their inaugural season in 1970, one that saw him wear the captaincy. He'd be a Canuck for four seasons, and not long after was their head coach. Orlin was the first player inducted into the Canucks Ring of Honor and is considered by many to be one of the greatest Canucks of all time. I caught up with Kurtenbach recently at the Canucks alumni suite prior to a home game at Rogers Arena and started out by asking him who his hockey heroes were when he was growing up on the prairies.
Well, the old six-team league, I think with Toronto, with Teter Kennedy, I think was the one I remember writing a write-up about at school. And so, that began with, there was only six teams, so it was there wasn't that many players that you watch. And then Gordie Howe was from our, and Johnny Barr, John was from Prince Albert, and I got to know John later and play with him in Toronto here.
Before we get to your professional playing days, even your junior playing days, can you remember the first NHL game you had a chance to watch, whether it was either on television or if you had a chance to get, as a youngster growing up, to see a game live in person?
No, I bought a TV, and that would be in the middle 50s, and we had one of the first TVs available and watching that. And then training camp with the Rangers and watching, go to training camp, and then went up with the Saskatoon Quakers, and there was guys like Doug Bentley and Max Bentley, and, well, not Max, Doug at that time. Max was still in Toronto. And so, I was then getting involved by that time with some of the NHL players.
At that time, you're, as a teenager, having great success playing junior hockey in Saskatchewan. You played, as you mentioned, for the Prince Albert Minto's team. You played in Saskatoon for the Quakers. And then you finished off with the Flin Flon Bombers to win a Memorial Cup. What do you remember about winning Canada's junior title?
That was very exciting. Prior to that, you mentioned Prince Albert Minto's. We had a good club every year, and Prince Albert or Flin Flon would beat us out in the finals or semis or whatever the case may be. And I was one of the players picked up just to give you an idea. At that time, the Western League was allowed to pick up three players because of the amount of people from Montreal and Toronto West compared to the Western Canada. But in the meantime, the Flim Flam Bombers beat out Fort William, I think it was, and then they beat out Edmonton to advance to the finals, and then they were allowed to pick up three players, and two were from the Lakehead and myself from Prince Albert. And it was very, very exciting time. We played the first two games in Flin Flon. I didn't play. At that time, Flin Flon, I think the seating capacity was 1,200, and I think we were all leaning over the boards on one side, and it collapsed. The whole boards from the center ice to the end boards on one side. So when that finally finished, and Hull Ottawa beat us those two games. Then we went to Regina, to the bigger arena, and played the remaining games. And we came back and tied it up 3-3 and beat them. And I remember clearly in terms of getting a pass and giving it to Teddy Hampson at center ice, and he beat Claude Ruel, who went on to coach Montreal and play, but a winning goal, and there we were, the champs. And again, you got to remember that with the at that time there was a movement of players right across. So Hull Ottawa had Murray Balfour from Regina, a big centerman Wilson from Winnipeg. So they had the choice of the players right across Canada, and so it was a great series. And I was very, very happy and very proud to be picked up by the Flin Flon Bombers. So it is a great memory.
Former Canucks captain Orland Kurtenbach, our guest today here on Canucks Connected on Sportsnet 650. Before you were a Canuck and a captain for the NHL franchise, you started your pro career in this city, in the old Western Hockey League. What do you remember about the time that you came out to the West Coast to start your pro career and helping, at that time, the Western League win the President's Cup trophy as the top pro team in that league?
Well, again, six teams in the National League, six in the Western League, six in the American. After training camp, the Canucks sent me out here, or I should say the Rangers did, and Art Chapman was coaching, and we had Phil Maloney at center and Jackie McLeod, and we had a very good veteran defense, Hugh Curry. Anyway, I won't mention too many names, but we set a record in the league. We went on to win, and it was very, very exciting. And of course, being in Vancouver, coming from the prairies, I'll just be quick on this. But at the end of the year, I drove back with Jackie McLeod to Saskatoon, and when we left Vancouver in middle of April after the playoffs, the cherry trees were blooming. All the glads were out, gladiolas were out. It was magnificent here, and I always remember that. We drove through Seattle, no Highway Canada or no Number One Canada, and Seattle was the same. We get to Spokane, and it's starting to change. We go through Crow's Nest. It is really starting to change. And then on to the prairies. And so anyway, yes, my memories is very unique, and I'll remember this all.
You mentioned being a part of the Rangers organization. You started your NHL career with them, and then eventually when you fast forward to when the league starts to expand, Vancouver, a city that you fell in love with originally as a pro, got a chance to have their own team in 1970. You were picked by them in the expansion draft. What was the feeling like when you had the news coming to you that we're seeing you come back here to Vancouver?
Well, in that regard, I had been with the Rangers for 4 years, and I got lots of ice time with Emil, and then I had a back fusion that cost me a year and a half. So at the end of that 1969-70 season, I had a meeting with Emil Francis, and he said they had Walt Kachuk coming on the scene, and they had a very good young club coming up, and he said, I can't protect you. So I knew I was going either to Buffalo, where I played for Punch in Toronto, or for Bud Poile here in Vancouver. Or it went from San Francisco. So anyway, the news was that I'm coming to Vancouver. So we were packed and ready to go, and we put down roots, and it's been home ever since. So it was a great homecoming, And again, those are memories I will not forget.
What did it mean to Orland Kurtenback to be named the first ever team captain of the NHL franchise in Vancouver?
Well, initially, it's certainly a pride thing, an acknowledgement. But at the same time, those things don't really sink in until the year progresses and you're starting to play. And as it turned out, so many things went so well for so many of the players here. And it was just magic. We wherever we went in, one thing sure, we weren't chased out of any buildings. And it was so nice to see, you know, people like Andre Boudry and some guys that, you know, players that didn't have a chance, you know, in terms of Bobby Schmatz and different guys coming on the scene and making a name for them, so, and so on. And the same thing still occurs here. The only thing when you know, when I was playing, 98% came from Canada and Major Junior, and now it's Sweden. It's all over the world, and it's bringing great talent and the speed of the game. It's wonderful to watch. So, yes, I'm happy to be in Vancouver.
Orland Kurtenback is our guest for a few more moments here on Canucks Connected as we look back at his days as a player in multiple leagues with the Canucks organization. You're one of just a handful of people that's actually played for the Canucks, played in one city, and had a chance to be the head coach of the same yes. team. What was that experience like
again,
for you?
Again, it was marvelous. The club wasn't at that time was having a really struggling. And when I left Tulsa to come back here, Phil Maloney had come to talk to me, and I said, well, I'll come back for the year. And, you know, all these things, the timing is very important about a lot of the stuff, but I think I probably wouldn't have agreed to, I would have probably gone back to Tulsa, but we lost, I took over in, I think, towards the end of December, and in January we lost, in February we lost. Then we didn't lose a game in all of March, and we end up tied with Los Angeles for a playoff spot, and they made it because they have one more win. And so in some ways, the timing of a lot of stuff, and it was, just to get back to your question, it was marvelous to be coaching here in a place that I first broke in, well, you know, that things really went well. I think probably when I came back here to play, all the things that I did in junior and minor pro and all the things sort of fell together in terms of scoring and of course the penalty killing and the things that I did. So it was Vancouver's been very, very deep in my heart, and the fans, I just want a little thank you to all the fans that have been so good to me and my family. I have Burnaby, I have three son-in-laws from Burnaby. So in that end of it, we have a big family, and it's been marvelous.
Two more questions for you, Orland. One, you were the first member of the organization to be inducted into the Ring of Honor. That is such a prestigious honor for any player of any organization. When you step into Rogers Arena and look up to the rafters and see your name and your face up in this building, what comes to mind?
A little shock at the first. No, going back to the Ring of Honor inception, 2010, it was an acknowledgement of hockey, both as a player and coach, and of course, just the feeling of belonging to Vancouver. And again, it's been a marvelous road, and very appreciative.
Finally, Orland, you've been a huge force behind the scenes and up front in the public eye in making the Vancouver Canucks Alumni Association one of the, if not the strongest of any in the NHL. How valuable has that been to you as a former player, and how impressed are you to see so many recent Vancouver Canucks join the alumni family here into their 50th anniversary season?
It's finally taken shape now with all the players starting to come back here, and forming a very strong, you know, when we first got off the ground, the Western League players were very involved in helping us get off the ground as well. And I think from my recollection, going back to Toronto for a meeting with Andy Bathgate and Keith McCurry, when we sued the National Hockey League for money that were with Manulife, and the NHL had claimed it, and a lawsuit had given that money back to us, and it was sent on to us. So that was sort of the start, and that was, you know, that's not that long ago. And so but aside from that, our Canuck alumni, we used to play 20 games a year all over the province, from Kitimat to Cranbrook and so on. And I don't have the definitive figures on that, but I think we've left in excess of $2 million for minor hockey across the province. Now, things are changing now. In terms of, you know, the guys coming back now, I don't think they're playing that many games. But between the Western League and the ex-NHLers that were here, everybody made a big effort to go out, and again, the fan base that we had across the province is continuing, and it's nice to see, with the club doing so well this year, that the place is full, and it's really nice to see. And like everything else, as the time goes by, you get a couple of good draft choices like we've had now, and they're really coming to the fore. So it's a lot of fun to watch, see right now, and have you all report on it, etc.
Orland, you were the first former Vancouver Canuck that I ever interviewed when I was 12 years old back in Nanaimo. You were a coach of the Chilliwack Chiefs back then. You were a class act to conduct an interview with a young guy. You're still a class act to conduct an interview with a much older guy right now.
That
so.
Was a Centennial Cup. That we went on. Oh, right. My that's God. Right. Oh, good. Well, congratulations to you. You're doing it. It's excellent. Good. Hey, it's good.
Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for sharing your stories with Canucks fans of all ages. Enjoy the rest of the 50th anniversary season.
Thank you so much.
That's former Canucks captain and head coach, plus the first ever inductee into the club's Ring of Honor, Orland Kurtenbach, joining us here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Joey Kenward. Be sure to stay with us. Coming up in a few moments, we'll hear from another original Canuck who's spent the last 50 years in the NHL, either as a player, broadcaster, or manager. Plus, he has his name etched on the Stanley Cup. You're tuned in to Canucks Connected, profiling the Canucks alumni here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Canucks Connected, a show celebrating 50 years of NHL hockey. Here's your host, Joey Kenward.
Welcome back to Canucks Connected, as we continue to profile the Canucks alumni here on Sportsnet 650. Don't forget, you can follow the Canuck alumni all year long on their social media feeds. They keep them up to date on nearly a daily basis. They're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all with the same handle, @CanucksAlumni. Plus, there's plenty of great info on alumni members spanning all five decades of the organization. It's all on their website, and that's easy to remember too, VancouverCanucksAlumni.org. Okay, let's hear from our next alumni guest. Boy, he's been someone I've wanted to speak with for quite some time. He entered the Canucks history books just a few months before making his NHL debut, and he'd go on to a career in the league that has lasted half a century.
Today's player profile is on former Canucks defenseman Dale Tallon.
Now Tallon coming out over a zone line for Vancouver, goes to center, Lundy down on the right side. Here Tallon going ready to go. He shoots on that great save there by the Jordy. And what a play that was by the rookie Dale Tallon. And the crowd responding very enthusiastically.
Dale Tallon rushing at center. Trying to go over that line. Pulled by McKinney, still has the puck. He shoots.
Dale Tallon was born and raised in Rouyn-Noranda, Quebec, the son of a former senior hockey player. He'd go on to be a standout defenseman in the Ontario Hockey League, while at the same time be a highly competitive golfer, which included winning Canada's National Junior Men's Championship. In the summer of 1970, Tallon became the first player ever selected by the Canucks in the NHL draft, and later that year was part of the first ever Vancouver team to play at the Pacific Coliseum. He represented the Canucks in back-to-back All-Star games in his first 2 years in the league and was initially named to be a part of Canada's lineup for the 1972 Summit Series against the Soviet Union. He played 10 years in the league before calling it a career, but he didn't leave the NHL for long. For 15 seasons, he was a TV and radio broadcaster in Chicago before moving on to various managerial roles, which he's held for the better part of the last two decades. I recently caught up with Tallon from his home in Florida, and started out by asking him who his hockey heroes were when he was growing up in Quebec in the 1960s.
Well, in Noranda, we didn't get many. We got a lot of the Montreal Canadiens games on TV. Probably three out of every four games would be a Montreal Canadiens game. So I, Rocket Richard, John Beliveau, Doug Harvey, I really liked. And, you know, those are guys that I wanted to play like. And, then I liked the Blackhawks, the fact that they walked upstairs to go to the ice in those years in the playoffs. It seemed exciting, and it seemed a great place to play. So those are two of my favorite teams, and I love Nikita and the way he played, his hockey sense and his abilities and how he handled the game. It was fateful for me to end up playing in Chicago with Nikita, a guy that I admired as a kid. So it was pretty special to play with him.
Not unlike many kids growing up pursuing their hockey dreams, you as a teenager did leave home from Rouyn-Noranda to go to Oshawa, Ontario to start your junior career in the Ontario League. What do you recall about that? Was that a big adjustment that you needed to make, not only as a hockey player, but as a young man?
No, it was easy for me because in the summers prior to that, as a 13, 14-year-old, I used to go to London, Ontario and work in the pro shop there at Fanshawe Lakes Golf Club with a really good friend of ours, Mel Casey, who was the golf pro there. I'd sleep in the pro shop, and I'd take the bus and hitchhike to junior golf tournaments around southern Ontario to play and improve my golf game. So I was used to being away from home. And then that first year when I went to Oshawa, it was quite thrilling. I was excited to go and live in the same billets as Bobby Orr in Oshawa and stayed in the same room. So, you know, it was pretty thrilling and pretty exciting for a 15, turning 16-year-old in the 60s. But go to Oshawa and play for the Generals, that was a big thrill. It was a big step, too. You know, going from juvenile hockey, which I had played in Rouyn-Noranda, and then going to the best senior league in hockey at the time and going to play in Oshawa, I was excited. It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
You were
great memories.
You were part of a high-profile trade, though, after your first year in Oshawa. What was that moment like? Not every junior player gets traded, and it sounded like you really enjoyed your time being with the Generals. Did that come as a bit of a shock?
No, it accidentally happened at the Hot Stove Lounge one night. My dad was there for a meeting, and meeting a gentleman that was going to do some work with him. And Buck Cooley and Gus Bodner happened to be standing right beside him at the bar in the Hot Stove Lounge of the old Maple Leaf Garden. And they were talking amongst themselves that they'd like to get me in a trade. They were trying to get me in a trade. And my father turned around and said, "Would you like to get him?" He said, "He's my son." And that was kind of shocking to them. And that's how it all went down. And, Oshawa wasn't a very good team, and they needed to rebuild. And so they made a deal with the Marlboros. And my father had played a little bit of hockey with Hank Goldup when Hank had broken his ankle with the Rangers. And he always said that, if my son was ever in Toronto, that he could stay with the Goldup family. So I got traded to the Marlboros, and then I moved in with Hank Goldup and his family. And they had eight kids, and I'm an only child. So that was an unbelievable experience. Glenn Goldup and I shared a room right across from Markland Woods Golf Club in Toronto, where I was a member. So things are a lot of fun there. And I have fond memories of the Goldup family, and I owe them a lot. They really helped me a lot for 2 years.
Dale, that's twice now, through two questions of this interview, you've brought up golf. And I want to ask you a question, because before you were drafted by the Canucks, and at the time playing junior hockey and really making a name for yourself in Canadian hockey circles, you were doing the exact same thing in golf. How close were you at all? I mean, the year before you were drafted into the NHL, you won Canada's Junior Golf Championship. How close were you, when you look back on it, to maybe pursuing professional golf over pro hockey?
Not close at all. I used it as a bargaining tool. Unfortunately, I'd won at Kelowna Country Club the year 69, and I was offered a contract with the Canucks when I was drafted, and they offered me not quite what I expected. So I told my agent at the time to tell him that I was going to go play golf, but if he didn't up the ante and get me a better contract. So that's basically what I was doing. I mean, in those days, it was such a tough time, tough thing to do. But, I mean, if I had to, I would have. But all along, I wanted to play hockey. It was my first love. And, you know, I could always play golf later, but I couldn't do the reversal. So I made the right decision. You know, although in hockey, I had a lot of injuries that affected me as far as the golf is concerned. But that was always going to be my number one priority, was to play hockey. And we just made a big deal out of it just to get more money out of them. It was a negotiation tactic more than anything.
Today.
And it worked.
Former Canuck Dale Talon is our guest today on Canucks Connected here on Sportsnet 650. All right. Can you take us back to your memories of being drafted by the Canucks? It's June of 1970. They're an expansion team. It's their first draft at the Queen Elizabeth Hotel in Montreal. What do you remember about that moment?
I don't remember much because I wasn't there. You know, in those days, you didn't go to the draft. I was up at the Bobby Orr and Mike Walton Hockey School in Orillia. And I got a phone call. I didn't expect to go that early, to tell you the truth. You know, we all knew that Perreault was going to be number one, either in Vancouver or Buffalo. And then, you know, I thought I'd go in the top 10. I wasn't really thinking that I would go second overall. And I thought maybe that if Perreault went to Buffalo, that the Canucks would take Reggie Leach or take a Western kid, and I would go maybe to the Bruins at three. And it turned out that I ended up going to Vancouver second overall. So I was startled. I was elated. I was happy. I was, you know, I knew Vancouver was a great city and had a lot of players from the in their organization already, and they had a good head start as far as being an expansion team. But no, it was, once I found out, I was in a phone booth actually driving on the 400 going to Toronto from Orillia, and my agent had called and said that I was drafted second by Vancouver. So, I was obviously very excited about it.
All right, let's fast forward then a couple of months to you make your way out to the West Coast to pursue your NHL career, and you're doing it amongst a group of players in the same locker room that are finding a new home themselves, because that was the first year of Canucks hockey in the NHL.
Right.
What was that environment like going into a new locker room where everybody, regardless of whether they were a rookie or an established vet, they all kind of were in the same position, weren't they?
Yeah, a lot of them were, but a lot of them were veteran guys. I was very fortunate to have a great group of guys there. Classy group of veteran players that took me under their wing. We had 6 weeks of training camp in Calgary the first year. So it was a battle every day. They were all gunning for me because I was the draft choice and the bonus baby and all of that. So it was a battle the first 6 weeks. But once we broke camp and went to Vancouver, everyone was in the same boat. And to have Orland Curtin back and Pat Quinn and Andre Boudria and Gary Doak and just go down the list of vets, Roser Paymont, Teddy Taylor, Murray Hall, those guys were so good to me. They took such good care of me, you know, at dinners and every night at their houses, Christmas and all that. And, I mean, they're still friends. They're still great friends. And, of course, some of them have passed on, and that's been sad. But, you know, Orland Curtin back, and we still stay in touch. Dennis Kern, Kernsey's one of the best guys you'll ever meet. He stays in touch all the time. I get emails from him letting me know what's going on at Van. And he's at Capilano. I'm still a member at Point Grey. So here we go with the golf stuff again, you know. And Bracken was the club champion at Capilano, and he played in our organization for a year or two. So, you know, there were special moments. Those players were really great people and really took good care of me. It was a lot of fun.
Dale, what was it like to be in the city at that time? You know, Vancouver was one of the biggest cities on the continent that didn't at that time have a major league sports team. Like, could you go anywhere and not be recognized that first year? Or was it, maybe a little slow going and wait? What was it like to be in that city as an NHL franchise?
Well, Vancouver is, you know, like, it's pretty small in a lot of areas. You know, it's got by the rivers and the water and the inlet and the ocean, et cetera. So you can't really hide there. And it was, you know, you were always in the public eye no matter where you went. So as a 19-year-old, 20-year-old, you had to be careful what you did and where you went. I tried to be a good citizen as much as possible. I did have some fun. I was single, and I liked to have fun, and it was a great city for that as well, but you had to be careful because people knew your business, so you had to watch. My first year, I lived with a good friend of mine who's passed on, Ted Turton, up in the British property, so I lived with him for a year, so I wouldn't, be by myself, and that worked out great, and a friend till his passing, but they took good care of me, and people really found people in Vancouver are nice people. I mean, I regret not finishing my career there. I wanted to finish it and start it there, but things happen. It's a business as well. I still have maintained a lot of good friendships. As I said, I'm still a member of Point Grey Golf Club and will always be a member there. I was a member in 1970. Dick Munn was the golf pro at the time. I kept my membership for this many years, and I intend to keep it. And, who knows, I might end up out there someday. So a lot of fond memories. A lot of great things happened to me in Vancouver. I learned a lot.
Dale Tallon is our guest today, joining us on Sportsnet 650. You mentioned some of your hockey heroes that you idolized watching on television and watching in person growing up. What was it like to defend against some of those superstars when you were in your first year playing for the Canucks?
Well, I was a centerman turned into a defenseman. I wasn't a great defender. I was a good offensive defenseman. I liked to rush the puck, carry the puck. But I was a centerman most of my career. But when I played D against some of those guys, it was a lot of fun. I remember Jean Rattel turning me inside out a couple of times. Beliveau, the same thing. And I remember Bobby Hull coming down. And I played the right side with Barry Wilkins. And he came down and he'd shake the shot and go wide. He'd stick one, try to block that shot, and he stuck one in my leg. And I didn't block many shots after that. So many great players. Gordie Howe, obviously, was still playing very well and with Detroit, and Mahovlich, and you go down the list, Montreal had, I think they lost 7 games that year to 1 year. If I remember the first game in the Forum, it was, I think we got blown out as 11-1 or something. And I was on for a lot of those goals against. I had Winburn, Bernier, and those guys blowing around. But it was exciting. Those guys that you idolize and admire watching on TV, and all of a sudden you're playing against. I remember the first year, Orland Kurtenbach hurt his knee. We were in the playoffs at Christmas, and then he got hurt, and then we kind of lost our way. But we had some good players. We had a good, solid team.
Your first 2 years in the NHL, and this is very impressive, you represented the Canucks at back-to-back NHL All-Star games. And for a young kid, to go to that first All-Star game in Boston must have been a thrill of a lifetime. What do you remember about who you sat in the locker room with and what that experience was like as an NHL rookie?
Well, I was nervous as heck, and I sat beside a Ward number 5 in that game. It was East against the West, and Gordie Howe sat beside me. And his arms were bigger than my legs. And I remember, he laced his skates up and the veins were popping out of his arms. I go, I hope I get on his good side. Anyway, I went to the rink very early that game day and got dressed so he wouldn't see me without my equipment on. I went to the rink about 3 o'clock. And I also had a pregame meal with J.C. Tremblay, who was so cool and relaxed. He told me, relax, kid. He said, you're going to have fun. Just enjoy it. And I didn't sleep. I was so excited about having to play with those great players. And being on the ice at the same time in the Boston Garden was obviously thrilling. And, the next year I was in Minnesota. And I hurt my hip. And I had a hip pointer problem just before game before, and I had a hard time moving, but I wasn't going to miss that for anything. And that's amazing. Those things you'll never forget.
I know another event that you'll never forget, but I'm sure you look back and say, boy, I wish I could have been a part of it. You were named to the original list of players for Canada for the 1972 Summit Series, and that's a tremendous feather in any young player's cap, because if I'm not mistaken, you might have been the youngest out of any named to that preliminary roster. I know you didn't play in the tournament, but you were around the Canadian team for much of that time. How special was that, even just to be recognized by the greats in Canada hockey circles to be in the conversation, just to be a part of that 72 Summit Series squad?
Well, it was thrilling, and I was very fortunate because the WHA had begun, and they weren't going to be able to play, so there were some openings for young players like myself to go, and I was fortunate to play in the games in Sweden, and I played the last game on the way home in Prague, and I was slated to play the last game because of injuries to Pat Stapleton and Bill White, but I dressed for the warm up, and I was really nervous to have to play in that game, obviously, but they were able to play, and I was able to watch it from the locker room. But the thrill of that will never end. I mean, it's still special to me. I mean, that we have a special bond, that team. It was capitalism against communism at the time, and to go through 10 days in Stockholm and to go through 10 days in Moscow with those guys, we're in a special bond. And I learned so much from that experience. It made me a better person and made me a much better player as well. I was playing right wing with Gilbert Perreault and Richard Martin, and Harry had told me I was going to be the checker, the defensive guy on that thing. And then when we went to Sweden, I played defense and played very well, and that's when I started to think I was suited to play defense instead of forward. And that's when I got my confidence to be able to play that position again.
Dale, you'd come back home, and it would only be one more year, I think, as a member of the Canucks before you experienced your first trade in the NHL. You were dealt to the Chicago Blackhawks at the conclusion of your third year on the West Coast. What do you recall about that moment in your career?
Well, it was very bitter. It was bittersweet. I was very confused and... I might have been making a rash decision at that time, but I just felt it was beneficial to both sides that the WHA had started. So, they were not sure where I should play, and whether I played center, I played right wing, I played left wing, I played defense. I was all over the map that third year. I wasn't getting along with the coach, and so, the WHA had come along, and I said, well, I think I'm better get out of here. And, I was lucky because of my experience with Team Canada in 72. Dennis Hall, Dan Mikita, and Bill White, and Pat Stapleton, I got to know them. They were on the Blackhawks, so they helped me get to Chicago in that trade. And, the next 5 years I was a Blackhawk, and I loved that city, and I still have a home there. But it was frustrating, and I wasn't sure what I should do at that time at 22, whether to stay or not. And I elected to go to the trade, and the rest is history.
You had 5 years in Chicago. You then finished off your career in Pittsburgh before retiring after 10 years in the league. I know you battled through some very unfortunate injuries during your playing days in the league. It didn't take you long, though, to stay in the game, and there's so many people in these parts that obviously remember you as a high first pick of the Canucks and obviously being a long time GM in the league, but you spent a very long time in the broadcast booth, both in radio and television, as part of the Chicago Blackhawks broadcast family, 16 seasons, if I'm not mistaken. How much fun did you have that? And did that really sort of help kickstart your thought process to one day moving from the broadcast booth eventually into the front office?
Well, it had a lot to do with it. 16 wonderful years. I worked with a great friend and gentleman, Pat Foley. We had a lot of fun together. He was a great player. He still is. Great play-by-play guy. And I kind of hung around. And when he got tired of talking, I'd chime in something smart. We'd move on. I think we had a good team, and we had a lot of fun. And it was an eye-opener for me, and I learned a lot from up high. It's a much easier game from there, and I was a much better player up there than I was on the ice. But I enjoyed it, but I had enough of it, and it was time for me to... Bob Murray asked me if I would come down and would. I took a huge cut in pay, and I started working for Bob Murray, and he got me into the business, and the rest I, you know, started to get on the road and see the games in the rinks all over the world, and I loved every second of it. I thank him immensely for allowing me to work for him and learn from him and get into the business side of it, which I was thrilled to do.
Few more moments with former Canuck Dale Tallon joining us today here on Canucks Connected on Sportsnet 650. You've spent decades in managerial roles. People know you most recently as the GM of the Florida Panthers, but you were GM and in a few different capacities with the Chicago Blackhawks, and even if you weren't in charge of the team when they won their first Stanley Cup, your fingerprints are all over that roster that helped kickstart just a great run of playoff and championship success in the Windy City. You have your name engraved on the Stanley Cup after they wound up winning it for the first time during your tenure with the Hawks. Does that go down as your greatest achievement in the sport, being a part of that organization that eventually went on to win it all?
I would say probably. I mean, the Team Canada thing was pretty special, and playing for Vancouver in the first year is special, and they're all different moments and for different reasons, but winning the Stanley Cup is what the ultimate goal is for everyone, no matter what capacity you're in, and to be part of a group that sacrifices and works and reaches a goal, which is such a high goal, such a difficult goal, I'd have to say that, yeah, that's the ultimate deal is winning the Cup. But it takes an army, you know, like I had a great staff. Rick Dudley and Mark Bergevin and Mark Kelly and Michelle Dumas and, you know, Stan Bowman was part of that team. The whole group, I mean, it takes for a whole bunch of people. The scouts are all terrific. And, you know, Joel Quenneville and his staff, and even the coaches before him, they built some sort of equity into that club as well. And had relationships with players that were there before and after, so... It's hard for one person to take any of the kudos for winning a cup. It's just a whole mess of guys that really care and came together as a unit and collectively worked for the goal of winning the Stanley Cup. And that was what I was most proud of, is the young team that did it and how they did it and how they approached their business on and off the ice. It was impressive, and the whole organization, you know. Bob Pulford helped me along the way, mentored me as well, and so there are just so many people that are involved in that process. It's hard to thank them all, but it's really gratifying when it happens. It happened a few times after that as well with a majority of that core. So, you know, that was a good young team, and I was hoping to do the same in Florida, but it just didn't work out, and so you move on. But the ultimate goal is you have to win in this business, and that didn't happen, so here I am.
Before we let you go, final question. Not long ago, you turned 70 years of age, but you turned 20 when you were a member of the Vancouver Canucks in their first year. 50 years goes by, I'm sure, quickly when you think of it that way, Dale. When you think about where your hockey journey has taken you, where does the start of it, being in Vancouver and being a part of the Canucks family, where does that rank for you as far as how important a stepping stone that was to give you the career in the sport that it has?
So that moment, being drafted and playing and stepping on the ice as a Canuck and playing 3 years there, three wonderful years, the ups and downs, obviously with injuries and change of players and management. You know, Bud Poile was a real class guy. Bud took such good care of me, and David Poile was at that training camp as well my first year. And you know, I look back, and Orland Kurtenbach and Pat Flynn, and as I said before, all those guys, Bobby Schmott, that was a group that really special to me and mean so much to me my whole life, and that will always feel that way. And the people I got to know out there that are still friends of mine, you know, Dennis Kearns, as I said earlier, and you go down the list of guys that I played with there that are still friends. I wish it had turned out better in the hockey side of it, but it happened, and move on, but I still have great memories, great people, great city, maybe someday I'll go back and play some golf at Point Grey and retire out there. But it was just a wonderful experience for a 19-year-old coming from Rouyn-Noranda, Quebec, to be able to live and play in Vancouver. It was very, very special, very high up in my ratings as far as great skills in life.
Well said. Dale, this has been a real treat to have you take our listeners down memory lane to talk about your career, not just as a member of the Canucks, but in a fantastic consecutive number of decades being involved in the National Hockey League. We wish you and yours all the very best. And look forward to seeing you maybe on the golf course one day here in Vancouver as we roll along. Thanks so much for doing this.
Jim Robson. Yep, they had a Jim Robson. He was a gentleman too, and he took good care of me as well. My pleasure. Thank you.
What a career he's had in the NHL. That's former Canuck Dale Tallon joining us today on Canucks Connected here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Joey Kenward. Thanks again for being with us. It's that time of the show that we look back on many of the memorable moments on the Canucks calendar. It's time once again for This Week in Canucks History.
Time for This Week in Canucks History, brought to you by Desert Hills Estate Winery, proud supporters of the Canucks alumni. Check out their great selection of award-winning wines at deserthills.ca.
We have just enough time in the program to highlight a couple of interesting milestones from this week. Let's start with November 12, 1974, when the Canucks registered their 100th win as an NHL franchise against the Chicago Blackhawks. John Gould had the lone goal for the home team, while Gary Smith stopped all 29 shots that came his way as the Canucks skated to a 1-0 win. That, by the way, was Vancouver's first ever shutout against Chicago. Another shutout milestone occurred on November 14th, this time in 1996, when Mike Fountain became just the 18th goalie in league history to post a shutout in his NHL debut. Fountain stopped 40 shots on the road that night in a 3-0 win over the New Jersey Devils. It could have been even more memorable, as Fountain wound up being inches away from scoring into an empty net late in the third period when the Devils had their goalie pulled for an extra attacker. And finally, on November 14th, 2006, the late great Pat Quinn was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Represented at the induction ceremony by his wife Sandra and daughter Callie, Quinn has gone down as one of the greatest Canucks of all time, representing the club over a number of decades as a player, coach, general manager, and team president. That does it for another edition of This Week in Canucks History, brought to you by Desert Hills Estate Winery. And that does it for another edition. Edition of our show. Thanks again for being with us. I want to again thank our special Canuck alumni guests, two original Canucks, Orland Kurtenbach and Dale Tallon. Hey, if there's an alumni member you want to hear from, let us know. You can reach us on Twitter, get to our radio station at Sportsnet 650, or to me directly at Kenward's Corner, and that's Kenward's Corner with a K. Don't forget to visit the Canuck alumni website. It's easy to remember, VancouverCanucksAlumni.org. On behalf of executive producer of Canucks Hockey, Cam Barra, I'm Joey Kenward saying thanks for listening, and I look forward to having you join us next time as we continue to profile the Vancouver Canucks alumni here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.